Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, coming to you from Hackettstown, New Jersey, and the Farm Machinery Digest. So hopefully everything today is going well on your operation and in your life. We're already into July, and I want to apologize for not having a show last week. It is never my intent to miss one week of this show, and I hold my audience in high esteem, and I'm not, believe me, I'm humble. I don't think that you're sitting there with bated breath to listen to this guy from New Jersey with this funny accent, but I know that a lot of you do look forward to it, and I certainly look forward to delivering it to you. And what it basically had happened, I was getting ready to do my show last week, and my computer blew up. And what I didn't physically grenade itself, but I guess, you know, in the vernacular of computer or electronics, we say it blew up. We used to say, when I studied electrical engineering in college, to say it let the smoke out. It didn't let the smoke out, but I guess it let the smoke out digitally. I was getting ready to record my show, and all of a sudden it flashed and said restarting. I had my hands off the computer, and I was actually talking to my friend Gene Wurst, who came back east. He lives now out in Las Vegas, and we were going to plan to get together for a day and see each other, but that did not happen, and all of a sudden the screen went blank, and the thing died and would not restart. And so that was a fiasco. And the reason why I'm telling you that is to explain my missing in action last week. It was not my desire. And also, I have a new computer right now, and it's set up good enough to record this show today. So I ask you to please be forgiving of me if some strange sounds come in here, or the sound quality is not what it normally should be, or what have you. And it was a little bit of an ordeal getting this going. I spent in total 6 hours on the phone with Dell, and they had confirmed, I guess, through the prompts that they had given me, that the motherboard went out, and I don't understand why that happened. But hey, you know, coming from the machinery side, I know stuff dies. I mean, we didn't get any power surges or anything, and we do have a clean electrical circuit here in Warren County. It's pretty good AC. But anyway, so that died, and I had to send it out to them. I had an extended warranty, but they said it would take 2 weeks to get it back, so I could not be without that for 2 weeks. And it really was a humbling moment to think how entrenched my life is with this computer, which is actually kind of frightening. But anyway, so I decided, well, I'll just buy a new one and get the new one set up and have the old one for a backup. So I bought another Dell, but they obviously did not have that. Mine was only 3 years old, but, you know, planned obsolescence day. So I bought the replacement model, got the replacement model, had it shipped to a computer center in town, some gurus for them to set it up for me. I am not a computer guy. I'm like a person who puts a car in drive and just steps on the gas and doesn't know what's happening in the planetary and the torque converter and the valve body and the line pressure. So I know how to operate this thing, but I'm not in love with it. And they had trouble setting it up, and then they finally got it set up after 2 days, and it wouldn't. Then the part that I need to use for the podcast would not work. And I spent after church on Sunday another 4 hours on the phone with Dell, and they kept doing stuff all the way from India. They took control of my computer, and the gentleman was very, 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 very nice. I mean, I'm not making light of that. He was very nice, but you know you're in trouble when you're on the phone with the parent company, in this particular case, Dell, and they have control of your computer, and you're sitting there with him on the telephone, and you're looking at your monitor, and he's doing a Google search for a tutorial video of how to get the microphone to work. So that would be like going to the John Deere dealer, and you have a problem, and the technician is doing a Google search for to figure out what's wrong with your injection pump. So he did a whole bunch of stuff after 4 hours. I guess determined that it was not working, that it was defective, and I was going to go buy another computer locally and then send that one back. I was going to buy another Dell. I did have good luck with them, and everything I have is Dell, so I'm not going to fault them for one bad product. And then by God's grace, the next morning, that was Monday morning, and I turned it on, and I wanted to show my wife what was going on with it, and it was working and recording. And the audio and everything was working. But the analogy that I would make to everyone is that, and that's why I wanted to tell you about this in case something goes a little bit haywire during the show, that it would be like you're putting the distributor back in on the side of the road and putting in a tooth off and just moving all the wires on the cap to get the car to run right, or the pickup truck to run right, so you get back to the farm. Well, that's how this computer is right now. It may be one tooth off in the distributor. Nothing is where I want it to be or working the way I want it to be, but it should be able to do fine with this show today. So I'm really happy about that and grateful, thank God, and really was a miracle. And then what had happened was that then Dell contacts me, and they said that my old computer needs a hard drive. And I said, well, I brought it to the place in town, and we checked the hard drive because they were able to download all of my data from it. Well, most of my data. I did lose some things. I don't know what I lost, but I did lose some things. And they said, well, maybe when we put the motherboard in, it blew the hard drive. So to me, that's like basically saying, well, you put the alternator in and it blew the headlights. Well, either something is wrong with that motherboard, or I don't know what's going on with that. But hey, the thing, all I could say about this is that if anyone truly thinks that we're going to have autonomous tractors and autonomous cars, the industry can't get a desktop computer PC to work right or diagnose it properly. They're just throwing parts at it. So hey, that's the way of the world. So I think that you should be pretty confident that you're going to be behind the seat of a steering wheel of a pickup truck and a tractor and a combine and a sprayer for a long time, because this is way, way, way too complicated for to do nothing, to accomplish their, as my father would say, and saying it respectfully, it's a little bit crude, removing your tonsils through your rectum. So it's crazy what they do with this stuff. And I had the brand new computer. It's a day old. Not even a day old. They're putting updates in it. I said, updates? Is that even turning it on yet? What do you need to be updated for? Forget about it. It's a different world. But I wanted to give you a little bit of an update on my crops. But first, I want to tell you what today's show is about. Today's show is about entrained air in fuel, be it either gasoline or diesel. So that is, and we often suffer the consequences of entrained air, but they are masked, and we don't identify them. So I'm going to hopefully give you some tips to be able to pick up or identify entrained air in fuel. And the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is that it's hard to believe that we're already in July and the first week of July, and that means in about 6 weeks is the Agro Expo, and that is held in St. John's, Michigan. And I've been telling you guys about it every week, and I really hope that you have the ability to be able to go there. It's, as I said, August 13th and 14th. It's a two-day event from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you know how those events are. You could get there early and stay late. It's not like a movie theater or a banquet. You can open a door at a certain time and close it. But, you know, as I always say to you, that my show, my website is about education. And that's what the Agro Expo is about. You know, we have challenging times in agriculture, and you know, every business has its challenges, but the challenges that we face are coming from all directions. We have weather challenges, we have market challenges, we have equipment challenges, right? Like, hey, I broke my sprayer this year, and then my cover crop got out of control, and I'm still paying the price for that. But anyway, and what the Agro Expo is, and you know, it's like any event. My father always used to tell me that you could learn in any school if you want to learn. And if you didn't learn something, don't blame the school, blame yourself. And yes, and that doesn't mean that some schools don't have better equipment or better advanced programs, but you could never go to a school, he said, and not learn something. It's how you but you also need to apply what you learn. And to me, that's what this event is about, the Agro Expo. It's about learning. It's about learning how to be a better farmer. It's about learning things about nutrient uptake on your crop. It's about exploring the possibility of maybe not doing row crops to such an extent, and maybe going into a non-traditional crop. But it's all about education. And you know, I humbly say that I'm Mr. Due Diligence. I love to do my due diligence because I like to explore things. I like to explore things at a casual pace. So when the time comes when I have to make a decision, I've already done my homework. I'm not a shoot from the hip type of guy. And I realize sometimes in life you have to shoot from the hip. But if the key is to not shoot from the hip because you didn't do due diligence. And really, that's what the Agro Expo, is about. It's you doing your due diligence and exploring different fertility options, have a better understanding of how plants take up their nutrients, and go through their test plots, talk to the people, and also explore the idea of expanding your operation into maybe a non-traditional row crop. There is, you know, the world still needs to eat. We're getting some good bumps now in the market as far as pricing is concerned, but we can't rest on our laurels. We need to make our farm and our ranches the most efficient as possible. Because if you have efficiency, then you could weather the other storms. I'm saying storms collectively, meaning metaphorically, I should say, meaning the storms of life and the storms of farming. So listen, check it out, the Agro Expo, and you could go to their website. It's theagroexpo.com, and it's definitely worth a ride over to St. John's, Michigan. So, you know, excuse me, you know, it never fails. When I start to do this podcast, I always get a frog in my throat, and I don't know why it is. Maybe because I'm talking or projecting louder than I normally would. But whatever. It's like farming. Something always has to go wrong. So and talking about going wrong, let me give you a quick crop update over here in the Bohacks place. Well, you know, when you have an operation like mine, even though it's small acreage, it's completely different than a large farm or a large row crop guy. You may do with 2,000, 3,000 acres, and you'll have different soil structures, obviously, throughout. I have different soil structures in my small fields. But anyway, but for the most part, most of those crops will have seen the same conditions during planting. And for the most part, they will probably see the same conditions during the growing season. One field may catch a shower that the other didn't, but in the dry year, obviously, that'll be a big, big difference. But, you know, collectively, if you have a 1,000-acre field, that it's going to see, for most part, it's going to see the same weather. But when you do 10 plantings, and they're between 40 and 50 days apart, and it means that your farm is not even like a test farm. It's not even like a test plot. It's just all over the part with moving parts, because every planting sees a different weather condition, different soil temperatures, different amount of moisture, different amount of GDU, and it's really all over the map, and especially this year. And my first planting looks pretty good. It's not going to put it in, I'm not going to put it in a, on a catalog. It looks pretty good. The second planting looks not as good. The third planting and up to the fourth planting, forget about it. It just saw a whole bunch of conditions that were not really ideal, especially for sweet corn. But what I did learn also is that I use Acuron 3 quarts per acre, and I have a soil structure which is sandy. It's about 7 CEC, 7.1, 7.2, so around 7 CEC. And I also add 1 pint of atrazine per acre to heat that up a little bit. Some people tell you to put 2 pints, but I get a little bit frightened with that. And so I put 1 pint of atrazine. And the same field, like I said, it's like a test plot, planted, has 4 different plantings, and they're probably from 20 days from the first planting to the last planting in that particular field. And what I did learn is that where the water stands, and then just the field has a pitch to it, a slight pitch to it, and water runs underground in heavy rains from the mountain, and then comes out into the field and like funnels out like an inverse of a funnel from the spigot going out. And and then obviously it moves very slowly. It's like a bayou. It's not moving fast. It's not maybe a half inch of water there. But what I guess I've gleaned is that that water must remove and take away with it the pre-emergence weed killer. You would tend to think that it would have leached into the soil deep enough with our rains for not to take it away. But all I know is that where the water was standing and moving very slowly, it wasn't running water where it took soil with it and made a gully, that I have the pre is doing nothing. The pre is a failure, and I'm getting grass and more grass than broadleafs, but I'm getting I am getting broadleafs, some purslane up there. So grass is more than grass escapes. So the grass is actually growing better than the corn. So I did learn that, and I am going to look into that, and I'm going to speak to my agronomist about that. But empirically, I'm no agronomist, but to me is that there's some correlation to where the water was standing and moving slowly and the effectiveness of the pre-emerge. Where the water did not lay, the pre-emerge worked, did an excellent job, and I have no escapes whatsoever. And because the corn is growing so slowly, we're not building any canopy. Not that sweet corn ever really builds a true canopy. And then the other thing that I learned in the other field is that we've had cold weather, but the past week or so we've had nice days, 80, 85 degrees in some heat units, and I'm still having slow emergence because I have so much trash from my down cover crop on the field that it's keeping the soil. I'm going to measure it later today, but I bet you it's 10 to 12 degrees cooler underneath all of that trash, and so I'm getting slow emergence. But hey, at least I'm getting some emergence, and that's basically it. So, hey, this is the day that the Lord has made. This is the crop that the Lord has given me this year, and I'll be glad and rejoice in it, and that's it. What more can I do? I couldn't have done anything different other than not break the sprayer. So, you know, it's funny, and I'm sure all you feel the same way as farmers, is that we just, you know, we blame ourselves for everything. And when I have a failure in the field or not even maybe a full-blown failure, but not a picket fence stand, I always look to blame myself. And that's really what's leading into this entrained air discussion today, is because, you know, when you have something go wrong or you're trying to fine-tune something, everyone always tells you, and it's true, and we learn this from engines and from the race cars, from the drag race cars, is that you can't make multiple changes at once because you can't quantify whether it's whether it's good or not. So you need to do ABA. So in other words, if you have this jet in the carburetor, you make a run, that's your baseline. You go one size leaner, one size richer, and then you make a run, and then you see which you see where you're at, and then you go back to the original jet, which would, and then you should be able to duplicate or closely duplicate your run. And in, you know, in farming and test plots, we call it replication and our control, the one that we're comparing everything against. And in my operation here, I can't have any control, or I can't have any real get any real data, because each planting is seeing so much of a different condition. And you know, you say to me, well, how does this have to do with entrained air and fuel? Well, first let me explain to you what entrained air is in fuel. It's a little bit different than cavitation. Cavitation in any liquid, whether it's happens from a pump. So the pump creates cavitation because either the suction side or the pressure side is being starved. And we did a show a while back upon cavitation. Now, when a pump cavitates, it will create air bubbles from that cavitation. And on a cylinder liner of a diesel engine, that's which has nothing to do with a pump, and it will actually erode away the cylinder liner, and it'll be like little dynamite, little hand grenades, and erode away the cylinder liner over time. But in a pump, what it'll basically do is the same thing, as those bubbles will actually attack the pump and the housing and the impeller, and actually deteriorate it and put holes in it and make it break apart. So that is air. So if you want to call that partially entrained air, then it is. And entrained means, when you're dealing with a liquid, entrained means that it's integral, it became part of the bulk fluid. It's in the bulk fluid. So in essence, if we make a simple analogy, if you look at chocolate chip ice cream, it's vanilla ice cream with chocolate chips in it. The chocolate chips are not on the top. They're not on the bottom. It's like when yogurt, when you have buy yogurt, it's like raspberry yogurt. All the fruit is on the bottom. You got to mix it up, right? Well, on chocolate chip ice cream, the chocolate chips are entrained. They became part of, and they're mixed into the vanilla ice cream. So when we're talking about entrained air in any fluid, and the focus today, as I said, is going to be on fuel, both gasoline and diesel, but you could have entrained air in a sprayer. You could have entrained air in a hydraulic system. You could have entrained air in a braking system. So you could have entrained air in engine oil. So the thing is that what that means is that the air, like the chocolate chips in the ice cream, is all mixed in with what we would call the bulk, B-U-L-C-K, bulk fluid. Bulk, B-U-L-K, not C-K, I can't even spell anymore. But bulk fluid, all right? So that is what we mean by entrain. Now, it differs from cavitation, where cavitation is creating the bubbles, all right, and then creating the bubbles, and they may become entrained, but they're usually localized in the spot that the cavitation is being evoked at, around the pump or the impeller, and it's usually right at the base of the impeller or along the cylinder liner as it's vibrating, and they do not truly become entrained. So historically, for the most part, and for our discussion today, if you have cavitation in a pump and the bubbles are being created and exploded from the vaporization of the liquid, and they're hitting that impeller or hitting that housing, and they're imploding and they're coming apart. 5 feet down in the hydraulic line, you're really not going to have that bubble exist. Whereas entrained air means that it's the bubbles are mixed throughout the bulk fluid or the bulk coolant in the cooling system. So how does air entrain into a fuel system? And you know why I spoke about my farm in the beginning as a lead-in was not only to give you an update and on how things are going or not going here, but also is that entrained air, as my multiple plantings often lead me astray. And how they lead me astray agronomically is that I start to blame myself. I blame the planter. I blame the crows from eating. I blame the turkeys. I blame whatever. And in that particular instance, I blame the cold soil, the wet soil, too wet, too dry, what have you. And the thing is that Annette may be correct for that particular planting. And for you to diagnose a crop failure, or for you to diagnose any, I don't want to say failure, performance issue or failure in a machine, is that you need to be able to take your emotions away from it, and you need to just look at the data, analyze it, and then quantify it, and try to put some numbers and qualify it, try to see what is going on. So, for instance, one of the keys, or one of the key signs of entrained air in fuel would be an engine, and this is gasoline or diesel, that does not seem to have the power, the throttle response, or run the way it used to. And that is because the engine is being fed aerated fuel. It's not being fed a pure bulk fuel stream, but has air bubbles in it. Now, you may have enough air that's introduced into that fuel, and we're going to elaborate upon this, so I'm just laying the foundation here, right, 20 minutes, 25 minutes into the show, I'm laying the foundation here for you to understand. And the thing is that, so we have to first identify how we have, whether we have entrained air, and then we have to be able to identify what's causing it, and then we figure out what's causing it. So basically, in essence, if I go into the field and I see that I'm not closing the seed trench with my closing wheels, well, then that's how I know I didn't have good emergence. All right, so the thing is that we have to be able to identify where this air is coming into. Now, as I was saying a few minutes ago, it's very easy to be led astray. And a common scenario with entrained air in fuel is that the engine runs very well, and then as the fuel level in the tank starts to drop or gets to a certain point, it does not run as well. And it just kind of sneaks up on you like gray hair, or sneaks up on you like weeds in a field. You come out there one day, there's no weeds. A couple of days later, you start to see some breakthroughs, some escapes, and then all of a sudden you come back another 3 days and the field looks like a weed patch. So what will happen is that the fuel level is paramount to diagnosing whether you have an entrained air problem. And now, let me break away for a second and put some clarity to this. On most engines that suffer from entrained air and a lack of performance, or a inconsistent idle quality, or on a diesel engine may be hard starting, on a gasoline engine also, but specifically on a diesel, hard starting, is usually the system either has a hose or a line that is porous, or it has a leak someplace. Leak meaning that it has an air leak, like an O-ring at a filter. It could be at the injection pump. It could be at a line going to a nozzle, an injector, and it's sucking air in. Now, you would tend to think that the majority of entrained air would be on the suction side of the system, and you would be correct with that, but that's probably, and I'm going to throw a number at it, 75% of the time, if you're getting air into the fuel system, air bubbles, it is historically on the suction side. But about 25% of the time, it could be on the pressure side, because as this pressure ebbs and flows, it is able to, if there's a bad seal or a bad gasket, it's able to suck some air in. So now, the other thing that's often very misleading is that when it's on the pressure side, so let's say it is the seal, the gasket on a spin-on filter, and if it's on the pressure side, you would tend to think, you say, well, you know, I got no leak over there because I'm not leaking any fuel, right? And, you know, common, you know, conventional wisdom would say that, but you could have a minute leak that will allow air to enter and fuel not to visibly escape. So that's often what bites us, is because we kind of poo-poo that and we don't look at those particular areas. So now let's first talk about the symptoms of entrained air. And I'll talk about a diesel engine first. And this is either a mechanical diesel or a Tier 4 common rail diesel or anything in between. Is that one of the key symptoms could be hard starting. It could be hard starting cold, or it could be hard starting hot. Now, it all depends on how the air is getting into the fuel system. Now, if you have a hard starting or a start and stall when it's cold, diesel we're talking about, or it runs very, very rough. Almost all of us have experienced the way a diesel engine runs when it has gelled fuel. Well, not fully gelled, partially gelled fuel, where it's starving for fuel, and how it sounds. And that is because it doesn't have a solid bulk of a bulk fuel stream, and it has air in there. So that is much more exaggerated than entrained air, even though that is entrained air, than that you would get from a porous hose or a leak site. So you'll find that the engine is hard to start. It may sound funny, it may surge, it may roll, it may knock, the combustion event isn't right, and those are all telltale signs of air getting into the fuel system. Now, keep in mind that on occasion, depending upon the scenario, the symptom may start that way, and then the next day it's fine. So you say, it's not some water in the fuel. You kind of invent. I mean, we all do that, and that's what you should do. You're not going to go to the doctor and get a complete body scan every time you have a headache and think you got brain cancer. So the thing basically is you write it off, and the next day it's fine. Well, maybe the next day it's fine because the temperature is different, and maybe because it's a warmer day, and that seal has expanded just inherently from the ambient temperature. It's 10 degrees warmer, 20 degrees warmer, or vice versa. All right, now it's 20 degrees colder, and it's starting to leak more. So you need to try to identify what's going on here and not get led astray. So you may say, well, geez, you know, it was nothing, and the next day it runs fine, the next 3 days it runs fine, or all summer it runs fine now that it got warm, and then now when we get into the fall, into the autumn, we have some chillier mornings, we have an issue. So basically, in essence, the take-home message here is that if you have a symptom like that and it comes and goes with no rhyme or reason, pay attention to the ambient temperature and see whether the ambient temperature, you don't have to write it down like GDUs, but say, man, this thing, you know, when it starts to get below 50 degrees in the morning, it's a little bit more bulky to start. And, you know, hey, it may be glow plugs. We'll do a show on that in the future about how to check those, but it probably is not. It's probably air getting into the fuel and not giving it a bulk fuel stream and trying to start the engine on air. The other thing, so let's say it starts fine, right, starts fine, is that you may have an idle problem. And you may have an idle misfire. You may just have the idle may sound a little bit different. We're talking diesel again, because the diesel combustion process talks to us much more than gasoline. So we have this, we have the actual, we could hear the ignition events. All right, you may have an idle instability issue. You may have a slight surge or slight roll. And then you may go, hey, you may be hauling some grain, right? Corn is up to almost $5. You're hauling some old crop. And, you know, it seems a little bit, the engine seems a little bit bulky, it doesn't seem to have the snot it had before, or what have you. Those are all signs of entrained air. So in essence, hard starting could be the, or harder starting, either hot or cold, excessive cranking. When the engine does start and fire, it seems a little bit rough or misfires. It takes a while for it to clear out. It has to bleed that air out, right? It could start fine. It could have a under an idle condition. It could have an unstable idle at times, or a constantly unstable idle, and you bring the RPM up and it starts to, and it clears out and runs better. Now, you would tend to think that if you had air in the fuel system, that if you brought the RPM up, that it would get worse. And if it's really sucking a lot of air, that would be the case. But if you're, because you have to remember, the way the engine is going to look at it is going to be the percentage of air in the fuel. So basically, in essence, if you raise the RPM or it's under some load and it's moving much more fuel and you're still introducing the same amount of air, it would be akin to like a tank mix partner for a herbicide. So in other words, you're putting 50 gallons per acre of water instead of 20 gallons per acre. So as the fuel flow becomes less because of less demand on the engine, and if we're introducing 3% of air into that fuel flow, the 3% of air is going to have much more of an effect on the low flow, at a low flow scenario, than it would on a high flow. Once it starts to entrain so much air that it becomes linear and starts to go and in lockstep raise the amount of air introduced with the amount of fuel, then what you will see is that problem may not be so bad at idle, but you go and you give it the throttle, and now it doesn't want to take the throttle. It's sagging, it's bucking, it's chugging, and what have you. Right, so that is something to keep in mind. So hard starting could be hot or cold. One or the other, could be both. Hard starting, idle quality, throttle response, and overall drivability or power with the engine. If it seems weaker than it normally does, you say, man, I used to be able to, you know, when we're getting 300 bushels per acre, and then this combine used to be able to take this throttle setting with no problem, and now she's, you know, I got to open the throttle more, or she just doesn't sound as happy, or, you know, I used to pull this chisel plow or whatever, and whatever just seems a little bit weak and what have you, then there's a possibility that you need to explore for entrain there. And now let's go over to the gasoline side. The gasoline side basically has the same symptoms. It could be hard or starting, hot or cold. It could have an idle quality issue. You're really not going to hear a change in combustion, all right, on gasoline. And you could have an engine that seems more lethargic, more lazy, and doesn't seem to have the power that it used to have. So those are the symptoms of entrained air. I have to say that the diesel, because of it being especially a mechanical diesel, it was a little bit more susceptible on the symptoms. Though they would be there in an electronic diesel, they sometimes are a little bit easier to spot in a mechanical diesel because there is no feedback system, no type of compensation as far as opening the injector longer to try to get the engine to run properly, because it has entrained air in it. The ECU does not recognize entrained air. There's no trouble code for entrained air, but it looks at the air fuel ratio and what's from the fuel delivered, and will tweak that to one particular point. But keep in mind that even in those particular instances, there is only what we would call in calibration so much correction. So if the maximum correction is 20%, then it could go and it could compensate up to 20%. If it needs more than 20%, there's no more left. All right, so and there's no more compensation. Now the problem just becomes very glaring. All right, now let's follow the fuel from the fuel tank to the engine. Now there's going to be an overlap between gasoline and diesel here. So if it's something comes up that I think that it's going to be specific to one type of combustion event, then I will hopefully remember to tell you. If not, I'll correct myself as we go along. So the fuel is in the tank, and then depending upon the type of fuel system it is, it could have an electric fuel pump in the tank, which is most modern engines have on gasoline, or have electric fuel pump in the tank. Some lighter duty diesels have an electric fuel pump in the tank, and some do not have a fuel pump in the tank. On a diesel, you would call it a lift pump. That is excuse me, that is the pump that brings the fuel to the injection pump. On a gasoline engine, it would be called a fuel pump because it only has one pump. It doesn't have two pumps. It's the electric fuel pump on fuel, EFI, electronic fuel injection gasoline, produces the pressure that is needed, whatever it may be for that particular application. So inside the fuel tank, there's a pickup tube. And usually, depending upon the application, that there is a piece of rubber or plastic hose in that pickup tube. And usually the pickup tube is part of the float assembly for the gas gauge. It is common over time for that tube, be it rubber or be it plastic, to actually start to crack and become porous. And when that starts to crack and become porous, it will go and it will suck some air into the fuel line. It'll entrain air, but it will only entrain air for the most part when that is exposed to air in the tank. So in essence, your first step, whether it's a diesel engine or gasoline engine, is to fill the fuel tank. You fill the fuel tank so you're completely immersing that pickup and that piece of rubber or plastic hose, so in case it became porous and has cracks in it, that it is bathed, it is submerged in the fuel. So if you have an engine, and if you have, you say, man, you know, it feels a little, well, it may not be hard starting, it feels a little bit lethargic when I get down to a quarter of a tank or whatever the number may be, half a tank, depending on the tank design, fill the tank up. You spend the money and fill a tank up. You're not going to waste it. You're going to use the fuel. And that is an excellent diagnostic procedure, because if you fill that tank up and now, man, this thing feels better. This thing feels better. This thing feels good. It feels like it should be. Then you know that you have an internal leak in the suction side of the pump, or if it's an electric fuel pump on a gasoline engine, it would be the pressure side, or it could be the suction side, pressure side of the system. And it is entraining air, and your problem is in the fuel tank. At that particular point, you could choose to do nothing about it, and eventually you will have to do something, and maybe 5 years from now, and say, when this thing gets down to a half a tank, I'm going to fill it up to the brim, and I will keep it full, and I will not be entraining any air, and you will see that the engine runs as it should be. Now, as a breakaway from this for a minute, is that any time that you have any engine that has an electric in-tank fuel pump, keep in mind that the fuel that surrounds it is its coolant. It's submerged. When it's not submerged in fuel, that the pump runs hotter and decreases its life dramatically. So the person who always, and we're going to use a car or a pickup truck, for example, instead of a piece of farm equipment, the person who historically has a quarter of a tank or an eighth of a tank or a half a tank and never fills it up, all right, is going to have a decreased life of the fuel pump on any type of application, because the operating temperature of that pump will be higher than normal because it is not bathed in the fuel. So the best thing is to always, you could run your tank down and then fill it back up, and you want to look at the area under the curve, in other words, the length of time that pump is always submerged in fuel. And if you do that, you will find that in almost every application, you will dramatically increase the life of that electric fuel pump, because it doesn't have many hours running hot. The person who's always running around near empty, or a quarter of a tank, or what have you, is the one who's always complaining every few years they're putting in a fuel pump because of that. So the cheapest way for you to have reliability and to keep condensation in a tank and keep the fuel pump life at its maximum is to keep your tank full. That doesn't mean you have to fill it up every day, but don't let it run. Don't be the guy who keeps putting $10 or $15 in and that pump is always going to be exposed. So to get back the entrained air, repeat that you think you see a degradation in performance, you see a degradation starting, throttle response, power, what have you, fill up the tank, pay note write pay note to it, and then pay note, and then you say, geez, a mile or two later, or 10 minutes later, you have to work that air out of the system, that this thing runs great, you have a problem in the tank. Do you need to pull it apart right now? No, you do not. But the thing is that you need to keep it in the back of your mind that if this problem gets worse or starts to show a different symptom, for now, geez, you know, the combine is harder to start when it's hot than it used to be, then you know that you were starting to have a problem in the tank, and that is where you would need to go first, because that pickup line, that pickup hose, even if it's a metal line, sometimes it cracks from vibration or from what have you, is that you know that you have a problem there. Easy diagnostics is to fill a tank up, and as long as that you are covering up where the leak is, that you should get rid of 99% of the problem. Why I'm saying that 100%, because it still has the possibility through that crack or orifice to cause some cavitation and entrain a minute amount of air, but historically that will not be enough in the bulk fuel to be able to impact the way the engine runs. So now we went from there. We have, okay, filling up the fuel tank made no difference whatsoever. So now what we have to basically do is follow the fuel line to the engine. And any place that you would have some sort of gasket, seal, or threaded connection has the opportunity to introduce air into the system. And as I said, now we're on the suction side, all right, on the diesels. We're on the suction side of it. So you could have a fuel water separator. You could have some fittings. You could have a spin-on filter, what have you. And so those are the areas where you need to be able to examine and put a wrench to them, snug them up, maybe take the gasket off, put a new filter, a new gasket, what have you on there, whatever it be, application specific to that particular scenario. Now, the thing is that once you get now to the, on a diesel, once you get to the injection pump, right, we could also be sucking some air in, but now on an older pump line nozzle system, you have to be concerned with the fuel coming into the pump, that it's not sucking any air, and then you need to be concerned with each individual line that goes to each cylinder, because if you have a 6-cylinder inline engine, you may have 5 cylinders on that are not entraining air, and the fuel line from the pump and to the nozzle for number 6 is sucking air, and then you would have an engine that has a normal combustion event on 5 cylinders, and the 6th cylinder has an abnormal combustion event because it's sucking some air and leaning out the mixture. And so you need to look at that. You need to look at that individually, the fuel in and then the fuel out. And then you also need to look at the injector, the connection on the injector, and depending upon the application of the injector, if it's you could take it apart. Most of them you could take apart and they have a seal on them and an O-ring and what have you. You could actually be entraining air in at the injector. Historically, at that particular point, you usually do see some sort of fuel leakage or maybe dampness historically because of the high pressure that is there. Now, you're saying, well, that's wonderful, but you know, how could we determine this? Well, the easiest way to determine this is not that easy. Hopefully that you, it's probably at this particular point, you're probably better off having a problem in the tank, because you could pull out the sending unit, and in most applications that's where you're going to find the leak and put a new hose on there, what have you, and you're all done. All right, the next best case scenario is one of the connections at either a fuel water separator or a fuel filter or the gasket on that. But if, and you will have instances, I had a guy that was a dairy farmer out in California, and he contacted me, and he had a big case loader, wheel loader, that he used to use. They had a pretty big dairy operation there to feed the cows, and he had problems with that and ended up being entrained air. So what you want to do with that particular point, like I said, it's easy for me to say it, it's not so easy for you to do, is that you need to break into the fuel line. And I would usually like to start at the furthest point away, if possible, going into the injection pump, break into the fuel line, and what you need to do is install a piece of clear hose, clear fuel line. Remember, the suction side on a injection pump is not high pressure, so you don't need to worry about that. You can have 10,000 pounds there, but you need to get a fuel line, a clear piece of plastic fuel line, and you need probably about 6 to 8 inches. If you could put a foot in it, that would be great. You want it, and you want to clamp it in there. You have to do whatever you got to do to make this, get this in there, all right, without breaking anything or hurting anything. So you got to jury rig this, and then you want to clamp it in there. And then you want to be able to start the engine and run it under the conditions that you have a problem. And then you want to look for air bubbles. So now this is like looking at a garden hose. You're at the spigot of the garden hose. You're at the end of the run of the hose. And you see air bubbles. Now you're going to have to work backwards to be able to determine where the air bubbles are coming, being introduced. So, like I say, it's really not so terrible. It's usually to get to the operative sites a pain in the neck, and it requires a little bit of finagling and tinkering and what have you. So now if you determine you have air going into the ejection pump, you're 99% sure that's your problem. I mean, at that particular point, all bets are off how the injection pump is going to work if you're feeding it entrained air. So now you want to go backwards from there, because you're at the end of the run. So now you may want to go to the fuel filter, if that's the next thing backwards in the line. And what you may want to do is now go before the fuel filter with a piece of clear hose, and then if you wanted to, you could leave that piece of clear hose still on the line going into the injection pump and see whether you have any air bubbles going into the fuel filter. If you have no air bubbles going into the fuel filter, and then you have air bubbles at the injection pump, you know that the air is being entrained, it's being introduced at the fuel filter. And that's usually a fitting, it could be a crack in the housing, it could be a bad O-ring seal or what have you, and then you work backwards that way. So in essence, now if you have, let's say it's a big machine, right, you got 20 or 30 feet of steel line, you don't need to cut the line and go into there and keep putting pieces of plastic pipe. You will go with the different connections. So if you have a fuel water separator, you would go over there and do the same thing. You would do a before and after piece of clear tubing, and you know, you could lengthen this tubing a little bit and kind of move the line over a little, move the line over to make it work. It doesn't have to be just so precise in there, but what you want to basically do is you don't want to make too much of an angle in it. You don't want to bend it at a, you know, near a 90 degree bend. You want a soft bend in it. You want a bow if it has to bow while you're doing your testing. And the thing basically is that because for the simple reason being, any fluid does not like to make turns. So there's frictional flow losses as it makes turns. So you don't want to skew your test by having it make it look like a still where you're looping it all around, because you don't want to cut the hose. So basically, in essence, you're going backwards. You're going backwards to the fuel supply. If you're going backwards to the fuel supply, then the thing basically is that you should be able to find the entrained air. If you're going from the injection pump over to the nozzle, the injection pump over is going to be high pressure coming out at that particular point. If you see that one of the lines has some dampness around it, that all the dust collected around, that's a pretty good place for you to start to thinking that you're introducing the air. And usually at that particular point, you're entraining the air into one cylinder. As far as a gasoline engine is concerned, you could do the same, but you need to keep in mind that the pressure coming out of the electric fuel pump from the tank, the fuel tank, is high. And historically, is that a gasoline engine with entrained air will either have that air introduced in the fuel tank because of its nature in the pickup tube there, and or at any connection. So it'll be a connection into a fuel pressure regulator if it has it, or a connection into a common rail system. So it's a lot easier, and you don't need to go with the clear line type of gig as you would with a pump line nozzle diesel, or even an electronic diesel, a common rail type of diesel. But to recap this in simple terms, is that you need to be able to identify the problem. The first step is to fill the fuel tank up. If the problem goes away completely or dramatically, you know you have an issue there. On an older piece of equipment, just like an older anything, you could actually have a number of potential leakage sites where you're bringing air into the fuel, and it is becoming an issue, because by the time it gets to the injection pump, it had air leaking in three or four sites. So that's why it's so important for you to do, if it's not in the tank, to do this air bubble test, because you want to be able to see, because you could have a leak in the tank. Slight leak in the tank, you have a slight leak at the fuel water separator, a slight leak at the fuel filter, and then you put this all together, and by the time it gets to the injection pump, it's loaded with air. And that is why I like to start at the injection pump. If I know the fuel level in the tank doesn't seem to impact it, start at the injection pump and then work backwards, because you want to see where you're actually introducing that air, and you may find that you're introducing air in two or three different locations, and by the time it gets there, it's 30% air, and that engine is not going to like that, and it's not going to run properly, and it's going to be very hard starting. So if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And remember that N-trained air in any hydraulic system, and you know, you can't do it with plastic hose in a hydraulic system, but the same theory is that any place that you're going to introduce air into the system is that you're going to be removing the working fluid, the bulk fluid, which is the working fluid, and then you're going to have poor performance. And lots of times, like on a hydraulic system, it will talk to you first. Or lots of times, even like on a smaller diesel, like in a pickup truck, you could say that the pump gets noisy at a certain point when it's low on fuel, and that's because the pump is actually cavitating because it's sucking air. All right, so keep in mind that N-train air is not air that's introduced via cavitation, but cavitation will have air, put air bubbles into the system. Alrighty, so now we're going to have our special delivery, and you know, I'm always so proud to say that special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. That's right outside of Youngstown. So if anybody not familiar with different parts of the country, Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar design, AD2 IF and VF tires, and now the Firestone of replacement tracks. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. So today's special delivery message is from John in Oklahoma, and he says to me, very short, he says, do you stick with one engine oil, or do you switch around based upon what you could get cheaper or is more convenient? Well, thank you very much for listening to the show, John, and that is a great, great question. You know, there's two different schools of thought here. That if you look at engine oils, and they're going to have an API, American Petroleum Institute standard, that they have to meet. But that standard does not necessarily represent the additive package that's in that oil. It's the oil's performance under certain conditions. So the short answer, John, is I like to stick with one oil. I like to stick with one grease. I like to stick with one brand of hydraulic fluid. That doesn't mean that if I'm out in the middle of Nebraska and something happens, that I'm going to ride around for 500 miles looking for a certain brand of oil or something. And but I do like to stick with that, and let me explain to you why. And I'm going to use the idea of what we talk about doing a jar test on a sprayer. All right, then we'll do when we have multiple tank mix partners in a sprayer, that it's always suggested that we do a jar test to test for any antagonism in that mix. And the thing is that I'll use that term because it is a agricultural term that we are all familiar with. When you mix different oils and you mix different greases and different brands of coolant and different brands of hydraulic fluid, for lack of better terms, I'll say you're mixing different additive packages. So if the majority of the fluid that you have has a very good additive package and the second one does not have such a good additive package, then you are diminishing that higher quality additive package. It would be akin to like saying if you have a flex fuel vehicle, if you have a tank of E0 and then you put half a tank of E30 in it, well, you probably have E15 or E14 or who knows what. So I'm not saying that ethanol gas is no good, but you don't have, so now you're mixing the two together. When it comes to greases, oils, and fluids, as I said, I will use the term antagonistic, but it's not antagonistic in the sense that you would find in a sprayer where you put the mix in there and it turns to gel and plugs the nozzles or doesn't want to flow. But you do have the possibility of some type of minor antagonism that will negate some of the properties of that grease, oil, or hydraulic fluid. And the thing is that, so keep in mind that the API rating is for a certain test procedure. It is not for any antagonistic occurrence to occur. So I like to keep my greases the same, I like to keep my oils the same, my hydraulic fluid, my coolants the same, and this way I do not have to worry about it. And I, like I say, I will not I use the New Holland because I have blue equipment, so I use the New Holland Amber grease, and I use that to grease my new John Deere lawn tractor, right? But the thing is that, and that's fine because it's a good grease, the John Deere grease is great, but I will, keep using that Amber brand grease, the Case IH New Holland grease, on that lawn tractor because I've used that since it was new, and I don't want to. I mean, am I going to have a failure? I'm not being anal about it, but why should I put something in? And John Deere grease is great, I could buy, but I'm not a chemist. I don't know exactly what they put in it. So the thing basically is that you want, it's always best to keep those fluids the same so that it has the full potential performance of that fluid and it is not watered down in any way, shape, or form. And that's what the antagonistic effect would be. It wouldn't be that it would not lubricate, but you may have the possibility of degrading its performance. So that is why I like to keep that. And that's a great question, and I want to thank you that for that. So listen, I hopefully the sound quality of this, I do this, what they would call in TV live to tape. So, I shoot from the hip here and ad lib it and just have a casual conversation with you, the American farmer and rancher. And I want to thank you for listening and know that my prayers are with you, not only this season, but all the time. And my prayers are with our beloved United States as we approach this 4th of July. So you have a great day, a great week. Be safe. And thanks you so much for listening to the Hot Rod Farmer.